Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC with more coverage of the superstorm aftermath and more. We will do now a truncated edition of our election series, 30 Issues in 30 Days. It's issue 28, Presidential Power. One of the big complaints that Democrats had about George W. Bush, especially in the war powers area, was that he tried to take for the president alone powers that may also have been seen as reserved for Congress or the courts in the Constitution. And yet President Obama has gone on to be very aggressive in using the power of the presidency himself on drones and detention, on immigration and more. It's Bush, Obama, Romney, and presidential power for just a few minutes now with William Howell, University of Chicago political science professor and author of Power Without Persuasion, The Politics of Direct Presidential Action. Professor Howell, thanks very much for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much. It's good to be with you. I hope you guys are managing okay out there.
Thanks a lot for your concern. And I think considering what is going on, let me relate the storm to this topic. We're seeing acts of executive power in the storm at the federal level and also by governors at the state level. Have you been looking at this day through that lens at all?
Well, I think as a general matter, presidents are expected to provide swift, quick responses to big crises. So there is certainly a sort of a raw electioneering component to what's happening right now, but it features into issues of governance as well. I think that, you know, when Bush stood upon the rubble in the aftermath of 9/11, that was seen by many as sort of a quintessentially presidential moment.
And proponents of robust government are saying this day proves that the Republican mantra of slashing government, including FEMA, and Romney has campaigned with respect to cutting FEMA and lots of other things, is that, you know, the proponents of robust government say that's ideological and misguided, and a day like this proves it. Do you think that becomes an issue of either presidential power or just an issue in the race?
Well, I think I would distinguish political discussions about what the proper size of government is from discussions about what the appropriate powers of the presidency are. Mm-hmm. So Romney would step in and argue that, look, there are lots of things that the government is in the business of doing that it shouldn't be in the business of doing. But he's not a proponent of a weaker presidency. He's going to need every bit of power he can get a hold of in order to advance his own particular agenda.
One of the terms we heard debated under Bush was the unitary executive, and that became so controversial. Remind us of what that meant.
Well, the idea, the unitary executive theory takes a number of different forms. In its weakest form, it's simply a recognition that the executive power lies with the president and the president alone, and therefore the president has a privileged place with regard to the oversight of the executive branch. Now, you can quickly interpret this unitary executive theory more broadly by saying things like, well, the power to implement law also involves the power to interpret law, and the president should be therefore given a lot of discretion on that front as well, and that any effort by Congress and or the courts to reduce the president's ability to oversee the executive branch is itself unconstitutional. But it really gets down to, you know, the president's ability to control the doings of the executive branch, which is by far our largest branch of government.
Obama has used presidential power on national security, immigration, gay rights, greenhouse gas emissions, a recess appointment for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, and Congress refused to confirm. More aggressive than you expected him to be?
Not really. I mean, I think that if what you expected is that the former constitutional law professor would come into office and restore some semblance of, you know, balance across the various branches of government, and then you would be, well, you'd be surprised and you probably would be disappointed. But look, all presidents face these extraordinary pressures to get stuff done in a system of governments that's stacked against them in over a very short period of time. And so, look, if he were to get anything done, he needed to take advantage of every source of authority at his disposal. And it's no great surprise that when you actually sit in the White House, as opposed to sort of observe it from afar, that your, you know, your incentives shift in really important ways.
The New York Times reported in April and quoted you in the article on the president about a year ago deciding that he wanted to make a conscious decision to use presidential power more aggressively to get around the Republicans in Congress who we saw as obstructionists. Did you see a concerted shift at a certain point in his presidency?
Well, there has been an important move. I would identify it. I mean, there are a number of points you could point to. One would be simply the debt ceiling showdown, in which, you know, there was a repeated effort on the part of Obama to reach some grand compromise that you know, is just a big flop. And what we've heard from the president more often since then is not, look, I'm going to cooperate and work with my, you know, my fellow legislators on Capitol Hill and my and members of both the Democrat and the Republican parties. And we hear less of that rhetoric and more of the rhetoric of the form, look, if Congress refuses to act, I will act. And that has a political resonance that goes way back, certainly back to Teddy Roosevelt, who talked about how he was going to be, you know, the president and emphatically be president and unapologetically so. And I think that this is more of a response by the president to perceived, you know, institutional failure on Congress, and that he isn't going to, you know, wait around for Congress to get its act together. He's rather going to move forward and advance what his notion of the public good is.
One of the things, I mean, you wrote an op-ed in the New York Times in September called Just As the Framers Intended with respect to all this use of presidential power. But one of the things that protects citizens from the power of the state is, as you know, the balance of power written into our Constitution, because it distributes power among three branches that have reason to compete with each other. Do you think that these checks and balances are overrated?
No, I think these checks and balances are a real thing. And
you know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but we have to go live now to Governor Andrew Cuomo, who's giving another storm update in New York. So, Professor William Howell, we thank you very much. Governor Cuomo.